1 o'clock having arrived, I'm going to call the February 24th, 2022 meeting of the House Taxes Committee to order under Rules 10.01 for remote hearings. Again, to the audience, those watching, get your information and all the materials for this meeting. Go to the House of Representatives website, go to committees and divisions, and then go to Taxes Committee and go to the lower right on the home page. You'll find all that. And also there's directions that have been provided there for people who have wanted to testify. So with that, Ms. Griska, please take the roll.
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt present.
Representative Marquardt present. Representative Liz Lagarde. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Representative Davids present. Representative Agbaje.
Present.
Representative Agbaje present. Representative Carlson. Representative Detmer.
Detmer present.
Representative Detmer present. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo present.
Representative Garofalo present. Representative Gomez. Representative Herr.
Present.
Representative Herr present. Representative Hertas.
Hertas present.
Representative Hertas present. Representative Howard.
Howard present.
Representative Howard present. Representative McDonald. Representative Miller.
Miller present.
Representative Miller present. Representative Moran.
Present.
Representative Moran present. Representative Mortensen.
Present.
Representative Mortensen present. Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Robbins present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Sandell present. Representative Schultz.
Present.
Representative Schultz is present. Representative Stevenson.
Present.
Representative Stevenson's present. Representative Swazinski.
Present.
Representative Swazinski present. Representative Joachim.
Joachim present.
Representative Joachim present. We have a quorum.
Carlson's present.
Thank you, Ms. Griska, and Representative Carlson is present. Representative Carlson, would you be willing to move the February 23rd, 2022 minutes?
Yeah, it'd be my pleasure to move the February 23rd minutes.
Very good. Representative Carlson moves approval of the February 23rd, 2022 minutes of the Taxes Committee. Any comments? If not, I'm going to ask you to temporarily unmute. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say nay. The motion does prevail. The February 23rd, 2022 minutes are approved. And Representative Gomez and Representative McDonald are now in attendance.
So, Chair Marquardt, just so you know, the reason why I was a little bit late Carlson, is I was reviewing those minutes.
That's what I had expected, Representative Carlson. I expect all the members of this illustrious committee to be well prepared when they come to this meeting, as they always are. Very good. So yesterday we heard Commissioner Doty go through House File 3669, Governor Walz's tax bill. And today we're going to hear testimony. The bill is already laid over, so we don't need to make that motion. But we'll go to testifiers, and we have probably 11 or 12. So if we could hold the testimony to 2 or 3 minutes, that would be great. And so our first testifier is Matt Norris, and on deck is Gary Carlson. So Matt Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And there you are. Please state your name and please proceed. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Matt Norris, and I am the Policy Director and Director of Minnesota After School Advance at Youth Prize. I come before you today supporting the updates to the K-12 education tax credit that were included in the governor's tax bill and urge you to make them a top priority this session to because of a confluence of events affecting the state's low-income families. This tax credit helps families pay for after-school activities, computers, school supplies, and musical instruments. I'm sure you've all heard the personal stories from your own districts of the impact the pandemic has had on Minnesota students. Many of them are a year or more behind in school, and computers are now a ubiquitous part of the learning experience. This means after-school programs like tutoring and access to computers are not just luxuries anymore, they're necessities. And that's why we've seen a 3,400% increase in demand over the past 2 years for our Minnesota After School Advance program, which helps families use this tax credit. We've served families from over 200 Minnesota cities during that time and leveraged this tax credit to pay for over 18,000 hours of tutoring last year alone. But despite this dramatic increase in need, each year we have to turn more and more families away. That's because the current income limit to qualify for the maximum credit, $33,500, regardless of household size, has not changed since 1997. That's 25 years, a quarter century. Now, while we're glad to see wages rising recently, it means that fewer and fewer families are eligible under these outdated income guidelines. And while wages have been going up modestly, inflation has caused the prices of everything else, like gas and groceries, to go up even faster. So this means that even if mom or dad is bringing home a little bit more in their paycheck, they still don't have the money to pay for tutoring or to buy a computer for their student. For example, I recently met with a community leader from Worthington. She was thrilled to hear about this tax credit until I told her about the income limit. She said most of the workers at the JBS meat processing plant there make just over $33,500, but they certainly can't afford tutoring for their kids. That's why we strongly support the Walls-Flanagan proposal. It would boost the income limit to $70,000 to catch up for the last 25 years. It indexes the income limit for inflation so we don't end up in this situation again. And it shifts to using adjusted gross income to calculate eligibility rather than the old household income definition, which we found to be very challenging for families, and it's also administratively burdensome for the Department of Revenue. All told, these updates would benefit over 38,000 Minnesota families. We'd also like to thank Representatives Frazier, Keeler, Joachim, and Robbins, who have all introduced legislation that update this tax credit in the House, and there's similar bipartisan support in the Senate. This is a proposal that is desperately needed and has bipartisan support. We've got the money. There's no reason to wait one more year to solve a problem 25 years in the making. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is Gary Carlson, and on deck is Beth Cadoon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities on the Governor's Supplemental Tax Bill. My name is Gary Carlson. I work with the League of Minnesota Cities, and we represent 837 of the state's 854 cities. The largest non-member is in Representative Damuth's district. That's the city of Roscoe in Stearns County, and they're a population 130. I want to testify on just two provisions that are very, very important for cities across the state that are in the bill today. The first one, and you also have a letter in your packet from a number of organizations supporting Article 3, Sections 1 through 4. This is the sales tax exemption simplification on construction materials when local governments and nonprofits are using a construction contractor. We've currently have this exemption actually technically in law. We have to follow the process in Minnesota Rules 8130.1200, but those rules are cumbersome. And in fact, many cities, counties, and even school districts choose to just pay the state sales tax because it really is a rigorous process that almost costs more than it's worth. So back in 2015, We worked closely with Commissioner Cynthia Bowerly and her staff at the Department of Revenue and came up with what we thought was a much better way to administer the sales tax exemption. And it was really modeled after what we've used for other priority projects over the years. Basically, those are outlined in Minnesota Statute 297A71 and 297A75. But this would allow us to continue to use a contractor, and then later, after the project is finished and the contractor has paid the sales tax, our jurisdictions could file for a refund. of the sales taxes. We think this is a good way for the Department of Revenue to maintain control of the tax system, but would also afford cities and counties and nonprofits the opportunity to take advantage of that exemption. I mentioned that that statute's been around for a while. There's actually 53 subdivisions in Minnesota Statute 297A71. This kind of speaks to the question raised by Representative Hertosh yesterday. So this is a known process. It's been used over and over and has worked very well and allowed jurisdictions to receive the exemption. So if we can get this done this year, I can stop bothering Representative Swedzinski and Representative Freiberg and Representative Davids and Representative Marquardt and Joachim, who all have worked with me over the years on this bill. So we're really hoping that this will be a priority for the tax committee this year. The second piece I'd like to mention is the public safety aid under Article 5, Section 1 of the bill. Cities collectively spend more than almost $1.2 billion per year on police current operations. That's an immense amount of money to protect our public. And the aid that the governor has included will be an important source of revenue to assist cities in these challenging times. As many of you know, we've had difficulty in attracting and retaining police officers. And these flexible funds will certainly help cities with recruitment and retention of officers. I just want to mention one more thing. The money is very flexible, but the League has been working with a number of groups on the challenges created by PTSD and mental wellness of our public safety personnel. And we've worked with the Sheriff's Association, the Police Chiefs Association, the Fire Chiefs Association, and we're ready to introduce a bill that would provide local governments assistance to fund prevention and training programs for our public safety personnel related to PTSD and other issues.
Mr. Carlson, would you please wrap up?
Okay, so I just wanna thank you. I wanna note one more thing. We might want to work with you on making sure that contracting jurisdictions and joint powers entities will be able to qualify for some of that funding. I know Representative Hertosh raised that yesterday. But, Mr. Chair, I will stand by for any questions later in the hearing. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you so much. And testifiers, please, good reminder, stick around if you would in case there's some questions later. Next is Beth Cadoon and Melissa Reed is on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is
Welcome
Beth Cadoon.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Beth Cadoon with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We represent over 6,300 businesses of all sizes and industries across Minnesota, employing over 500,000 Minnesotans. We advocate for public policies to strengthen Minnesota's business climate and to help grow Minnesota's economy. I would like to express our support for the governor's tax provisions on federal conformity items. These updates are needed to ease compliance burdens and to help industries that were hardest hit from the COVID-19 pandemic, including in the restaurant, hospitality, and entertainment venues. It is important for Minnesota to enact these provisions so we do not impose a state income tax hit on federal assistance that was provided to these businesses that in many cases were forced to close their doors for an extended period of time and are still in recovery mode. Early passage of these federal conformity items would be very beneficial so that taxpayers do not have this uncertainty regarding their state tax liability and do not have to pay higher state income taxes in the next few weeks on this federal assistance that they will hope to then get a refund later on if there's a later passage of the bill. We appreciate the department reaching out on how to best reduce compliance costs due to the numerous non-conformity items in past years with a catch-up in 2023. We're still receiving feedback from our members and would like to continue this conversation with the department and this committee on the best way to ease compliance burdens without creating hardship for taxpayers. Our concern is similar to what was raised by Representative Davids yesterday regarding some taxpayers that would be potentially waiting for a year for the refund. We would also be, we're also supportive of the angel tax credit in the governor's bill that will help encourage investment in Minnesota startups. We're also very appreciative of the governor's support and leadership to prevent the double digit payroll tax increases for employers and to make sure the UI Trust Fund is solvent for workers with a $2.7 billion replenishment of the UI Trust Fund. Though we know this is not carried in this bill, I know this committee can help push for this legislative fix that is needed by March 15th according to Commissioner Grove, in order to prevent this large payroll tax increase from occurring for a deficit that was caused by the COVID-19 pandemic and the related shutdowns to slow the spread of the virus. A concern we do want to mention with the governor's tax bill is the lack of permanent tax reductions and the great increase in ongoing spending. Most of the relief is one-time in nature, whereas the spending increases proposed are permanent. The governor's tax bill has about $257 million in tax relief in fiscal years 24-25 versus $5.5 billion in new spending, which consumes 93% of the currently forecasted fiscal year 24-25 structural balance. This would result in a budget growth of over 10% for the next biennium based on November's forecast. We urge the committee to not only support the federal conformity items and angel tax credit, but also look to enact some additional permanent tax relief in areas where Minnesota is the most uncompetitive and are constraining business and economic growth. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Les Lagarde is now in attendance. Next is Melissa Reed, and Ben Wagsland is on deck. So, Ms. Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very welcome to the committee. Identify yourself and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Melissa Reed with Park Street Public here today on behalf of the Minnesota Independent Venue Alliance. Meneva is the Minnesota affiliate of the National Independent Venue Association. Our members include Minnesota's most beloved independent venues and festivals from across the state, from First Avenue on the Dakota in Minneapolis to the Midwest Music Fest in Winona, the Blue Stem Amphitheater in Moorhead, and everywhere in between. The Minnesota Independent Venue Alliance is a 501c6 nonprofit with the mission to preserve and nurture the ecosystem of independent venues and promoters throughout the state. We represent both for-profit and nonprofit organizations. Meneva supports the tax conformity provisions in House File 3669, which would bring Minnesota into federal tax conformity regarding the treatment of the shuttered venue operators grants awarded by Congress. Thank you to this committee and the House for including Minnesota's tax conformity to these grants in your 2021 tax bill. And thank you to the governor for including it both last year and in this bill here today. 253 Minnesota small businesses and nonprofit venues received grants, which helped save Minnesota's internationally recognized independent music industry. Shuttered venue operator grants were the only targeted relief we received throughout the pandemic, and many of Minnesota's local independent venues would have closed without it. If the legislature and the governor do not pass tax conformity, the estimated impact is 10% of our grant award. We did not account for this in our grant budgets, which have already been approved by the SBA. Minnesota's live independent music venues were the first to close, the last to open, and reopening has proven much more difficult and turbulent than even we expected. With concerts and events continuing to postpone and reschedule, events facing distressed attendance and increased expenses, now is not the time for the state of Minnesota to tax SVOG grants. Minnesota is the only state that we know of that plans to tax SVOG grants. California was going to, but they passed conformity early in their legislative session. Mr. Chair and members, we urge the legislature and the governor to take early action on tax conformity so our independent music venues, promoters, and festivals can get back to what they do best, making Minnesota the home of Prince, Lizzo, Bob Dylan, Soul Asylum, the Jayhawks, and my personal favorite, The Replacements, an international destination for world-class live music. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. Next up is Ben Wagsland, and John Thorson is on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ben Wagsland. I'm the Executive Vice President for Hospitality Minnesota, representing Minnesota's restaurant, lodging, and resort and campground industries. Testifying in support of the provisions in the bill to conform to the federal law and to ensure that the emergency federal restaurant revitalization fund grants and the SVOG are not taxed in Minnesota. I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for meeting with us and for moving this forward in your leadership. I want to thank the governor and his team for including this in the supplemental budget. I also want to say thank you to Ms. Byers and the team over at Revenue for meeting with us last year and working on this, and to acknowledge Representative Baker and Senator Bigham and the other body who have independent bills on this as well. When I first testified in front of this committee, or last testified, excuse me, last year, I indicated that our industry is in the midst of a multi-year economic recovery. That continues to be the case. While there was some positivity last summer, the economic recovery really stalled out in Q4 and now here in Q1 of this year. According to our survey with the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis and Explore Minnesota Tourism in December, 59% of restaurants indicated they had taken on significant debt due to COVID, with the average debt over $500,000 per. Half of restaurants indicated that they had lower than normal revenue in the fall, and more than half indicated they expected lower than normal revenue here in Q1. Keep in mind, this survey was conducted as Omicron was just starting to rise, so I'm anticipating that those numbers are likely worse. We will have new economic data here in the next couple of weeks that we can share with you based on the next round of surveys. In the midst of this debt load and lower than normal revenue, they're also facing headwinds when it comes to inflation and supply chain challenges, as well as the workforce shortage, as our industry remains down 20,000 jobs from pre-pandemic levels. 1,700 restaurants received relief through the Restaurant Revitalization Fund assistance. And when you talk to these small business operators, they will tell you it was absolute lifeline for their business. They cannot afford to pay additional taxes on these funds. And as was indicated before, both on this and the SVOG, other states are not taxing these emergency relief plans. Since I know many of you care about what we're attempting to do with the Restaurant Revitalization Fund at the federal level, I will just note that there were 2,500 restaurants that were left behind, and we continue to fight for that program to be fully funded and appreciate your support in doing that as well. Thank you again, Mr. Chair, and members for your time, and to the committee as well for all of your work on this. We appreciate you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Garofalo, I missed your hand was up, but it's not up now. Did you have a question?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to compliment the previous testifier for specifically calling out one of the great Minnesota rock bands, The Replacements. That was that was the extent of my question. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you. Well, that was very important. Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. She also forgot to mention Phil Rembrandt from the Rembrandts, who was the lead singer for the Friends. But I do have a question for the gentleman from the hospitality industry.
Very good. Please proceed.
So just curious as to the effect on the Q1's quarter regarding the restaurants in Minneapolis, St. Paul, with the failed attempt to shut out customers who were not vaccinated or who didn't have a vax card. How much did that hurt the industry in the last quarter?
Mr. Wagsland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, for the question. I don't know that there is, that I've seen specific data across the board for Minneapolis and St. Paul. We were in regular communication with the mayors during that time in working with them. I know that we shared some national data from Open Table that during that week, there was a 65% reduction in reservations at that time in Minneapolis. I don't think they had data on St. Paul. It was one of the two most hardest hit, along with Cambridge, Massachusetts, of 50 cities that were looked at across the country. So it certainly was, I think, a bigger challenge than maybe policymakers there anticipated. And we shared anecdotal information from members that we were hearing from that have operations both in the city and outside of the city, and some of the concerns that they set forth therein. So that's the data I'm aware of. Again, it was a 65% drop. There were other drops around the country and other cities as well, I think due to some of the Omicron conditions, but none of them were as severe as what we saw other than Cambridge, Massachusetts in Minneapolis. I hope that answers your question.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, thank you. I did hear that that was 65%. I wasn't quite sure the exact numbers, so I appreciate you clarifying that. I think we're all pleased, especially the industry, that the mayors of those two cities came to the census and dropped that vax mandate card to get in so we can get back to our economy and have to help these restaurants and bars get back to life. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. I don't see any more hands up. So, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
I wanted to circle back to, I think it was Mr. Norris that was talking. Is it appropriate to ask a question now?
Absolutely, yes.
All right.
He was our first.
Thank you.
Mr. Norris. All right, go ahead, Representative Hurtado.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, you know, a lot of times we talk about the types of work that we intend to do in terms of providing credits or relief, encouraging different things to happen. And lately, it seems like so many of the bills that come forward, and especially with fiscal notes, there's oftentimes a lot of FTEs and extra administrative burden and cost that comes forward as part of the expense of running that program. And I guess I wanted to ask Mr. Norris, with regard to the targeted group of individuals or families that would use this tutoring, would seem to me, and this is anecdotal, Mr. Chair, it would seem to me that the preponderance of families with children are not at the high income limits of our social taxing scale. And so I'm just really wondering if there is any real purpose in having any limits. Anybody with children might need tutoring. And I'm just wondering, for the few that some may feel are getting a benefit that they can afford to pay on their own, if that isn't offset by just not having to spend a lot of money qualifying FTEs. If children need tutoring, they need tutoring. So, Mr. Norris, I guess, what are your thoughts on maybe looking at administrating the program just a little bit differently and taking some of the bureaucracy out of it, so that in the end, our goal is to help kids. If they need tutoring, they need tutoring.
Mr. Norris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hurtado, overall at Youth Prize, our philosophy is every young person throughout Minnesota should have access to high quality out of school time programming. The data is very clear that one of the largest drivers of our opportunity gap here in the state happens out of school, both in the after school hours and in the summer. So we would be supportive of any initiative, of any effort to expand opportunity. So whether that would mean taking off any income cap for this K-12 education tax credit, that would certainly be something that we would be supportive of. I don't have exact data on what the administrative costs are for this program for the Department of Revenue, but certainly our guiding philosophy, as I reiterated at the top, is that every young person in Minnesota should have equal access to those critical out-of-school time activities.
Representative Hurtado.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Norris. You know, it's anecdotal, but it seems to me that in the progression of life, when you start out, you're young, you have children. When the children are gone, it seems like you maybe start earning a little bit more money, and you maybe accumulate some wealth for retirement after the kids are gone. And it just seems like to me that the preponderance of people with kids are not at the high end of the income scale. So I just, Mr. Chair, was thinking about sometimes how we get so in administrating some of these programs, if it wouldn't be sometimes wiser just to look at the more global goal, and that is making sure that kids do well and they can excel and be able to take care of themselves in the future. So those are my thoughts, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hurtado. All right, next is John Thorson, and Nan Madden is on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
My name is John Thorson. I'm legislative director for LIUNA Minnesota in North Dakota. We're Minnesota's infrastructure union, representing more than 13,000 skilled construction laborers who build, maintain our roads, highways, bridges, and the basic utilities that allow our communities to thrive in every corner of the state. I'm here today to voice our support for Article 3 of House File 3669, a provision in the governor's tax proposal that streamlines a sales tax exemption for construction materials purchased by local governments and nonprofits. This measure increases the value of a dollar committed to local and regional construction projects that fix or replace aging municipal infrastructure that is at or beyond its useful life. And it's no secret that Minnesota has fallen behind in maintaining critical infrastructure such as water. For example, the PCA reports an estimated 822 wastewater infrastructure projects at a cost of $5.3 billion over the next 20 years. These are critical projects that will launch thousands of Minnesotans into lifelong careers through registered union apprenticeship programs that the construction industry relies on to produce a skilled and safe and efficient trades workforce. Registered apprenticeship programs support critical efforts that increase participation of women, people of color, veterans, and others not participating fully in the economy to their full potential. The socioeconomic impacts of a career that pays middle-class wages, provides comprehensive family health care and retirement benefits, and offers opportunities for training and advancement can exceed those created by lower wage, no benefit jobs by a factor of five or more. I want to thank the governor for including this provision in his tax proposal. It'll increase the value of public investments that make life better for Minnesotans throughout the state. It'll also help launch and maintain thousands of good paying union construction careers and fuel our future economic growth. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is Nan Madden, and on deck, Deborah Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you. My name is Nan Madden, and I'm the director of the Minnesota Budget Project. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with the committee today. The Minnesota Budget Project identifies and advances policy changes to make Minnesota a place where everyone can thrive, regardless of who they are or where they live. We believe the resources available in the 2022 legislative session represent an historic opportunity to build towards a future in which all Minnesotans are healthy, safe, and financially secure. We appreciate that Governor Waltz's budget includes many important investments in the things that everyday Minnesotans and their families need to thrive, such as affordable childcare, housing, and education. And we appreciate that its tax plan expands tax credits targeted to low and moderate income Minnesotans that help bring down the costs of raising a family and maintaining a home. This includes the long overdue updates to the K-12 education credit and an expansion to the child and dependent care credit, which we see as a good companion, but not a replacement for the very exciting proposed investments in childcare and early learning that are included in the governor's budget, and expanding the working family credit to include more families. I'd also like to thank the governor for proposing to eliminate arbitrary restrictions that are keeping some homeowners from gaining homestead status on their homes and accessing the property tax refund. These are good steps forward, and I encourage the committee to also strongly consider additional working family credit expansion and an expansion of the renter's credit. The renter's credit is especially effective at reaching struggling seniors, people living with severe disabilities, and other people across the state who have been hard hit by the pandemic and rising rents. I do want to raise concerns about the high cost of Governor Waltz's UI Trust Fund proposal, which would use about one third of the projected surplus to provide an untargeted benefit to all employers, whether they are struggling or highly profitable. We would encourage instead a target approach of support to those businesses and nonprofit employers that are truly struggling, and investing more of the surplus in policies that support the economic security of everyday workers and their families. I look forward to additional conversation with the committee during this legislative session, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is Deborah Fitzpatrick. On deck is Sheila Banny.
Good afternoon, Chair Marquardt, members.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Deborah Fitzpatrick, and I'm the Director of Policy and Research at Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. Our mission is to ensure all children have the best possible start in life and successful passage to adulthood with the help of caring families and communities. I'm here today to share something you have been hearing across committees and contexts. The kids are not okay. Families with children are really struggling. And to remind you about the connection between tax policy and child well-being. The state's budget, both the revenue and investment sides of the ledger, are a reflection of what we value most. In this moment in history, you must take bold action to change the trajectory and position Minnesota's children, youth, and families, as well as our state, for success. We believe with a significant budget surplus and the governor's budget approach, we have that opportunity in front of us. On the revenue side, the working family credit and the child and dependent care credit are powerful tools for increasing family economic security. We thank the governor for expanding access to these two critical supports, as well as the K-12 tax credit, education tax credit in his budget. On the investment side, the governor's budget includes an historic, holistic commitment to building the ongoing system of support necessary to address the many simultaneous challenges our children and families face. Helping all children to have a healthy birth and bond with their parents and caregivers, particularly in those first years of life, through healthcare, home visiting, and paid family and medical leave. Ensuring children and their families can meet their basic needs and create stable, caring, safe homes through significant investments in childcare, housing, food, and MFIP reforms. Helping Minnesota children and youth recenter and get back on track academically, socially, and emotionally through after-school, mental health, and other investments. We believe individual tax cuts will not create the underlying long-term support system necessary to ensure economic stability for our children and their families and head off adverse childhood experiences like hunger, homelessness, and family stress. Emergency federal resources helped children and families that needed our support before the pandemic and showed us what is possible. As these supports disappear, the needs have not. With a significant budget surplus, Minnesota has a moral and fiscal imperative to adopt a budget that matches our professed values and ensures every Minnesota child has the opportunity to succeed and contribute their many gifts to our state. Thank you for the opportunity to share these views with you today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is Sheila Vanney, and Monique Stumman is on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself. Begin with your testimony.
Sheila Vanney, Assistant Director with the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of the SWCD aid provisions in House File 3669. So for background, MASWCD represents the state's 88 soil and water conservation districts, including their 440 elected supervisors and their more than 460 employees. Funding for SWCDs is a shared local and state commitment, and our association's statewide leadership has spent considerable time considering the state portion of that funding. As a result, we are advocating for SWCD aid, a standing statutory general fund appropriation through the Department of Revenue to SWCDs. We are grateful that Governor Walz has included this in his supplemental budget recommendations. And we thank you, Mr. Chair, for carrying the bill. SWCDs are the technical experts and boots on the ground. Their staff and elected board members have the trust of their community members and are able to help landowners work through conservation programs from start to finish. To face our water quality challenges and increase our pace of progress toward cleaner water and healthier soils, SWCDs need more predictable and more adequate state funding. SWCD aid will help meet those funding needs. We strongly urge support for SWCD aid, and thank you for your consideration, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next up, Monique Stumman, and Matt Hilgert is on deck.
Hello to the chair and the committee members.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for inviting me to speak today. My name is Monique Webb-Stumman. I'm the director of School Readiness Learning Academy in North Minneapolis. I've been in education for 26 years, and I've been a director since 2009. I'd like to urge you to invest in our youngest children and their families here in Minnesota. Childcare is in crisis. Many people don't understand the financial challenges involved in providing childcare. COVID has made that challenge even more difficult. Many of our families at our center here are low income, often living on the edge, making ends meet. We need affordable, consistent, high quality childcare, and it's necessary for them to continue to work and for our children to be successful. We are their safety net, and we're also the safety net for many police officers, nurses, and doctors, and others to continue to go to work. The governor has proposed a budget to invest in childcare. I urge all of you, I urge all of us to support this proposal. The increase in childcare assistance would be huge. My husband and I have been funding the difference between the cost of a quality childcare that we get paid through the reimbursement of CCAP and the food program. And this will help us increase wages for our staff and maintain them at the same time. It will also eliminate families waiting 4 to 6 weeks to even get approved for childcare assistance. Right now, I believe it's 4 to 6 weeks. The governor's tax plan does not cut the taxes for the wealthy or these large corporations, but they all greatly benefit from it. We all rely on childcare for our society to work. And so I need for all of us, every single one of us, to support this proposal. It's past the time. It's well past the time for us to invest back in our children. And I thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is Matt Hilgert, and Matthew Mossman is on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt Hilgert, and I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties, an organization representing all of Minnesota's 87 counties. Committee members, Mr. Chair, first of all, we would like to thank the governor for his inclusion of the construction material sales tax exemption piece. I think Mr. Thorson and Carlson did a wonderful job explaining kind of the nuances of this provision. I think we also have a great history of bipartisanship on this particular issue. I know just in my short tenure at the Capitol, 7 years, we've seen Republican and DFL authors on this very same provision over the course of the years, and it's really been an issue of cost. And so we're hopeful that this is the year that we can push this across the finish line. I know most recently, Lac-La-Parle County and Itasca County commented on this provision in last year's committee, saying that this would literally make road projects go the extra mile, and certainly our membership is supportive of this. Regarding the public safety aid, while we still have some questions on the underlying formula, we are very appreciative to the attention of the need to increase and provide a flexible funding for local governments to address public safety needs right now. I'll go off what Mr. Carlson was saying, which is that AMC is actively involved in efforts to address some of the PTSD and mental health issues that we are seeing within our forces. And I know I was down in Chair David's district earlier before session where his sheriff talked specifically about the need to be investing in these upstream services for folks so that if and when they do have some situation that could cause PTSD, they can come back to the force instead of leaving the force. Because we are seriously concerned about the recruitment and retention of these personnel. We also support the SWCD funding. These are great organizations. Counties are active partners with SWCDs and contribute levy dollars to their operations. We are thankful for the recognition of state funding, and we are glad that it is sustainable and dependable here. And lastly, on the governor's proposal regarding senior property tax deferral program, we were very excited to see this in there, and I want to thank Commissioner Doty specifically for talking to our membership about this a few weeks ago. We agree with their proposal to increase the income limitations for this program, and we would also urge folks to go further and potentially look at that 15-year time block. Right now, someone who wants to take advantage of this program must be in their home for 15 years. We have suggestions from our membership to reduce that down to 5 so that more people can take advantage of this great program. And lastly, just as the committee thinks about this session, we would urge just a deeper look into some property tax relief mechanisms as part of tax relief packages. We've heard a lot about the income tax, potentially sales tax, and other mechanisms for relief, but with the residential values on the rise, smaller tax bases, we are very concerned about what the next 2 to 3 years mean for residential taxpayers. So thank you very much for the time today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony today. And our last testifier on the list, Matthew Mossman.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Good Matt afternoon. Mossman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Inter-County Association. Appreciate the time today. Many good things have been said already about the governor's proposal and Lieutenant Governor's proposal to eliminate or simplify the construction materials sales tax exemption. I just want to really thank the governor and Lieutenant Governor for championing this proposal and introducing it again. You know, this and making it retroactive to July 1st. This is a good overdue tax simplification, good tax policy that simply, it doesn't make sense, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the local governments to collect tax, to pay it in a state tax when there's so many infrastructure projects to be invested in. And so we really appreciate as well the bipartisan support that there has been and is for this proposal and sponsorship. And we really hope that we can get it over the line this year. I think that that is the other aspect of the governor's proposal that I really want to call out. And I think it speaks in making it retroactive. The refrain oftentimes has been obviously with other high budget priorities that compete for limited resources, that there hasn't been enough resources to get this full simplification into law. And I think the governor's proposal really acknowledges and calls out that this is the opportunity with the state's budget surplus to achieve that goal this year. So we appreciate him introducing that. Real briefly on two other provisions, Mr. Chair and committee members, we also really thank the governor and appreciate him for introducing the public safety aid and really elevating the awareness and the importance that providing assistance to local governments from the state to help with essential services is an important intergovernmental relationship to have between the state and local governments. We will welcome opportunities going forward to see if there are opportunities to possibly look at, as Mr. Carlson, I think, has mentioned, there are some issues with interagency agreements and how those might be funded or relevant to this discussion, as well as just the awareness. I think that some counties, I think, would certainly have thoughts that just simply removing the city population from the county population is not necessarily indicative of the remaining responsibility for county sheriffs and law enforcement and public safety. Finally, on that point, Mr. Chair and members, as a permanent tax relief mechanism, which we hope the legislature will talk about for intergovernmental finance, we hope that there will be some discussion about how the distribution of county program aid might be a better permanent solution in that regard. And then finally, as has been mentioned, there's been a long conversation over multiple years about different strategies for alternative funding sources for soil and water conservation districts. We are very supportive of the governor's proposal here. The other options that have come forward over the years have been, I'll just say, certainly less workable and from the perspective of county governments and potentially property taxpayers, as have been some of the solutions in the past. So we really appreciate the governor recommending general fund dedicated funding for this purpose, and we support that. And with that, Mr. Chair and members, I'm happy to stand for any questions, and thank you, Chair Marquardt, for carrying the legislation and the governor for bringing these proposals forward.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. Anyone else, any testifiers that I were not signed up that would like to testify on House File 3669? Members, any questions for any of the testifiers at this time? Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Ms. Stueman and the School Readiness Learning Academy. I wonder, Ms. Stueman, if your organization has any relationship with North Point, which is another organization on the north side of Minneapolis with a lot of community services associated.
We have limited. Yes, we have a limited relationship with them. We are, like I said, a private entity serving the north side, but we do have some relationships with them.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Ms. Cadoon. She's still on the line.
Ms. Cadoon is ready for your question.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Cadoon, could you repeat what you said in your testimony regarding the spending, the permanent and spending in the bill and in relationship to the tax cuts in the bill, the temporary one-time tax cuts. Can you repeat that section of your testimony?
Ms. Cadoon.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I'm happy to repeat that information. So in our calculation, the governor's tax bill has $257 million in tax relief in fiscal years 24-25 versus $5.54 billion in new spending in fiscal years 24-25, which, as I said, was about 93% of the structural balance and would be a spending increase over base of 10% for the next biennium.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Well, while everyone's praising this fine piece of legislation, and I'll admit there may be some good points in it, good provisions, it certainly does not address the issue that Minnesota is still overtaxed and is collecting more revenue than is necessary, and is evident in folks that I talk to in my district that permanent tax relief is necessary for Minnesotans from all walks of life. And this bill does not do that. There could be, I heard, possibly an $8 billion, perhaps a $10 billion surplus, and yet the governor's requesting in this bill $5 billion of more spending. So I'm not going to thank the governor for this bill whatsoever. I'll say it's about time for some things, such as the tax exemptions on materials for nonprofits and government buildings. I'll say it's about time. That's all I'll say about that. But it clearly is, I'm not going to thank him for $5+ billion of more spending and a palsy $200+ million of tax cuts. I think it doesn't go far enough whatsoever. I don't support the bill, and I recommend it send it back to the drawing board for some more permanent tax cuts to the state of Minnesota for Minnesotans from all walks of life. That's just my two cents for us. As Forrest Gump would say, that's all I have to say about that for now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Chair,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to have one comment and maybe one question. Want to remind folks, too, that the tax cuts that are in there with the child family credit and supporting families in their homes and supporting families to access child care so they can work are ongoing tax cuts and ongoing tax relief for families. And maybe to pivot a little bit to a question for Ms. Madden, if she's still on the line. You did touch on a little bit of something we'll be tackling in the property tax division regarding property tax refunds and renter's credit. Could you kind of explain how that helps with those ongoing costs for families?
Ms. Madden.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Joaquin, for that question. A quick reminder, the property tax refunds that we have for homeowners and renters essentially puts a limit on how big of a family's budget can go towards paying property taxes. So one of those elements of maintaining a home or renting a home. And that provides support that is income targeted and takes into account, it's really focused on the families who have the largest cost burdens as well. So I think we'd really like to see that be part of the mix for this year. It's been a little bit since the state has substantially taken a look at those property tax relief programs, and those are the largest tool that the state has that is targeted based on both ability to pay and levels of how much people are paying for their taxes in relation to their income.
Chair Joaquin, anything else?
No, thank you. That helps.
Thank you very much. Any comments or any further questions for any of the testifiers? Any other comments? All right. So, well, thank you, members. Certainly, House File 3669 and Governor Walz's tax bill is going to be an important part of the mix in the process as we go through talking about a tax bill. And you know, I think the discussion is good. And so you know, I do think Governor Walz offers a very important balance of tax cuts and also important investments. And investments can lower costs also. So, you know, not only do tax cuts lower costs to people, so can important investments in a number of ways when it comes to public safety, education, and healthcare. So thank you all for that discussion. Members, you might have saw in your email, there's a property tax. There was a referral of bills to the property tax division that was made today. Also, for the schedule for next week, we will not meet on Tuesday. No meeting on Tuesday, but expect meetings on Wednesday and Thursday. And so with that, members, thank you for your work this week, and we are adjourned.